Sure. Microphones are live.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the January 17th, 2012 San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors meeting. Please rise and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Passing. And so, to honor his good work and his memory and to send out good thoughts to his family, I would hope that we could say a moment of silence.
We'll observe a moment of silence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Supervisor Hill. With that, we'll move into the consent agenda. Let me see. I just received some requests to speak, but I see none for the consent calendar. So
Number four, I gave it to the clerk.
On consent?
Yes.
Okay.
Public comment.
Okay, please go ahead. I'll open it to public on consent.
Harry Richard Arnold. It has to do with the appointment of board members to various committees and commissions, and I really encourage that those not be just haphazard. For instance, one of the appointments goes to the California State Association of Counties. A lot of the public does not know that this group continually lobbies the state, lobbies for tax monies from the constituency. They also partnership with an outfit called ICLEI, which is a front for the World Bank that has been continually changing the laws in the state of California. They have contracts with the counties and the cities and the state of California itself to so-called harmonize laws, to alter laws, to prevent self-government so that they can prepare for a North American union. Another appointment is to the Regional Health Agency, and I encourage those people that are required to oversee our health, the air quality and things like that, not to just go unaware of the things that a child can see when they look up into the sky and they can see the crisscross and tic-tac-toe marks of Operation Cloverleaf, which is a dumping of aluminum and barium that affects the people, the plants, and the animals of this district. It hasn't been talked about by the newspapers. It hasn't been brought up by the people on this Board of Supervisors, the cities, or the various health departments. You can go to USA Today on May 12th and look up toxic dust, and it'll itemize each one of those chemicals that has a deleterious effect on the people you are supposed to represent.
Thank you, sir. Are there any more requests to speak on consent? I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board and ask my colleagues, Supervisor Gibson.
Nothing to pull, sir.
I'm sorry?
I have nothing to...
Supervisor Hill.
Nothing, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Teixeira?
No, sir.
Okay, with that, I'll entertain a motion.
Move to approve the consent calendar.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent calendar. Roll call, please.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes. Okay. The next item, Madam Clerk, presentations. Would you read that item, please?
Certainly. That would be a submittal of a resolution commending Deputy Brian Love, Deputy Mark Souza, Police Sergeant Joe Allen, Screening Supervisor Anthony Tessero, and District Attorney Victim Witness Coordinator Cindy Marie Asme for saving the life of the San Luis Obispo County Courthouse.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move its approval, Mr. Second. Chairman.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the presentation calendar. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes. And with that, I'll read this resolution. We do have the sheriff and a number of others this morning, but it gives me great pleasure to read this resolution. Whereas on Wednesday, December 7th, 2011, Edward Wilson was entering the county courthouse for jury services when he suffered an apparent heart attack and collapsed. Whereas screening supervisor Anthony Tedesco notified sheriff's deputies Brian Love and Mark Souza and Atascadero Police Sergeant Joe Allen of the medical emergency. And whereas Deputy Brian Love checked the victim and found no pulse or respiration and started mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, and Deputy Mark Souza and Sergeant Joe Allen began life-saving CPR. Whereas District Attorney Victim Witness Coordinator Cindy Marie Absey provided the automatic external defibrillator, AED, which was applied and used to assist in rescue efforts and provided stimulation to Edward Wilson's heart. And whereas rescue personnel from San Luis Obispo City Fire Department... I'll go ahead and turn it over to Sheriff Parkinson.
Come down and shake
Come on down.
You wanna?
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your good work. You want to take one of these with you?
What's your phone number?
I just want to be sure.
The right place at the right
time. Yes.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Good job, Sergeant.
Okay. Good work. Thank you.
They boot your name up about three different ways.
Yeah. It's like spelling. Adams.
No escaping yet. First of all, good morning, and thank you, Ian Parkinson, County Sheriff. Thank you again for honoring our employees, county employees, in one form or another, for their actions. You read the incident itself, and we don't get an opportunity to do this very often. However, this is the second time that we've been in front of the board to save a life, the Sheriff's Department and today in a partnership. So it's truly an honor to be back here in front of you today. These are events that led to the saving of a life. This is a true sign of teamwork here. We have a cross-section of people here that happen to participate, and it's a pleasure to be here in front of you to recognize them for what they've done, and I'm quite sure that they'll remember this for the rest of their careers. So thank you, and at this time I'd like to present them also with a life-saving award or life-saving certificate, starting with Deputy Love. Deputy Souza. Sergeant Joe Allen received his at the Atascadero City Council the other night.
Cindy Marie.
Thank you again for taking the time to allow us to do this.
Thank you, Sheriff Parkinson, and all of you involved. I think Sheriff Parkinson said it well, that the cross-training and cooperation among agencies is impressive and shows to the extent of the training that our personnel have countywide. And so thank you very much.
At the morning. We like our heroes to make us look good.
Yes, get some reflected glory here.
No. guys are
no,
the heroes.
Trust us on this one.
Though we could borrow some Kevlar or something.
Yeah.
Look better in green.
Mr. Brin, did you capture? Okay.
Are we good?
All right. Thank you all.
Thank you all.
It's the German seat.
All of them?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on in the agenda. The next item is public comment, and this is a time when members of the public can speak on items not on the agenda. If you would like to speak on any items not on the agenda this morning, please fill out a request to speak form and bring it forward. And when I call your name, please come to the front podium. First up, Mr. Eric Greening, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Thank you. Good morning. I am Eric Greening. I hope everyone had a good Martin Luther King holiday and reflected on how, as he said, the more checking to be something we definitely need to address. You should have received the correspondence from the Water Resources Advisory Committee. I know you don't want our water supply to become polluted or undrinkable. But RAC is the other subject, not the RAC, but WRACK, stuff that comes up on the shoreline. You are all members of the Integrated Waste Management Authority. I would like to thank you for your vote on the plastic bag ordinance as such to liberate those of us who don't use plastic bags from having to pay for other people's plastic bags at the supermarket. But during that meeting, you also saw the images of the movement of Fukushima and tsunami backwash across the Pacific, the various debris that is about to begin landing on our shores. And so another issue on which you need to have a hearing with emergency services and whoever else is to determine how are we going to address this. Some of it may be radioactive. We may not want to encourage people to go out and pick up trash, even such things as the Great Coastal Cleanup, unless we have Geiger counters or some way of determining which trash is safe to touch, which isn't, where it will go if it isn't. We have a whole series of issues coming our way across the Pacific. And so in addition to FRAC, we also need a study session on Fukushima RAC. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Okay. Please hold your applause. Gwen Taylor, followed by Callie Zulu. Would the on-deck person please be prepared to speak? So, Callie? Ms. Taylor?
The half-truths, the lies, the overall lack of information about the sewer project overall is drafting the basin, the saltwater intrusion in the Los Osos water basin, all have created a division in the community that will continue long after the sewer project is completed. Neglect by county in testing the groundwater wells for nitrate as required by the Regional Water Quality Control Board as part of the comprehensive groundwater management monitoring, the basin plan, the need for the county to establish a special and specific tax for the Los Osos Water Basin users, not just the assessment district. The need for the overall basin management, not just the water purveyors, but wells used by private well owners, all are a part of our basin. The need to assess the undeveloped property owners now, along with establishing a wastewater management district now for areas outside the sewer project, such as Cabrillo Estates, the Martin Tract, and other areas outside the assessment district, all should be done now. All of this was to have been done by a memorandum of understanding between the county and the water board in 1993 under Order 8313. This management district is long overdue, but vital to the groundwater protection of our basin. Where is the due diligence by the county? That's a very big question, but it's a very necessary question because the lack of action is creating more problems for the people of Los Osos and costing the people of Los Osos and the county. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Is it Kelly Zulu, followed by Joe Shacker.
Today, you honored individuals representing this county and saving a life. Good morning, Board of Supervisors. What do you want City of Arroyo Grande residents to do? Lisa and Doug Field of Santa Barbara County, representing the Tri-County Board of Supervisors, say they tell residents of San Luis Obispo County what to think and feel via long-range acoustic device, LRAD, like now. What do you want City Public, like now? What do you want City of Arroyo Grande residents to do? Lisa and Doug Field of Santa Barbara County, representing the Tri-County Board of Supervisors, have enjoyed the willful neglect of duty carried out by the District Attorney offices in the Tri-County area. The DA has filed a complaint to serve the Tri-County Board of Supervisors and Doug Lisa Field upon the FBI agent for acting in self-defense. Doug Lisa Field attended the first criminal hearing for PC 242 battery and PC 273 cruelty to child by endangering health with the FBI agent on January 12, 2012 in Santa Maria. What do the City of Arroyo Grande residents want? Lisa and Doug Field of Santa Barbara County, representing the Tri-County Board of Supervisors and Arroyo Grande Police Department and Commander Chuck Gerhardt, etc., have acted in concert to deny residents of the City of Arroyo Grande, San Luis Obispo County, safety by denying women, Kimberly Martin, Michelle Cota, Callie Zulu, a rightful place in law enforcement. I am FBI agent Callie Zulu. This case is federal. I look forward to having you a resoundingly relearning of the U.S. Constitution and what your crimes mean to you. Doug, Lisa Field have no intent in saving Tri-County lives at all. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Zulu. Joe Shacker, followed by Al Barrow.
Good morning, Supervisors. Time has passed since we've really heard anything about the flooding in Oceano. I have a few comments, particularly as it pertains to the what is called the island and McCarthy and Juanita. To this date, no tangible improvements have been made. I see where pothole digging has been done all along Juanita. I suppose this was done to see where utilities are located. I'm not an advocate of the pipe and pumps proposal, but was it discovered that there are utilities relocation issues if pipes are installed? Rain is forecasted for this weekend. Is Public Works ready? What, if any, progress has been made on the alternative plan of using the marsh mesher? That plan is far less costly than the pipe and pumps and would prove to be more effective if used properly. So far, we've seen money being thrown at the problem, including hiring more consultants. After the money has been spent and no real remedy in place, what will you propose to do? Take our taxes from double to triple what others pay? So the residents will have to pay for more spending on consultants. Are you ready for the rains? or just crossing your fingers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shacker. Al Barrow, followed by Ben DeFada.
The other one's on.
The other one's on.
The other one is on. Hello. My name is Al Barrow. Good morning, Coalition for Low Income Housing. Today I want to talk about who are the one percenters that are profiting from the gravity sewer in Los Osos. Who profits while the residents pay? The developers of vacant land are not assessed. So as of right now, they're not going to pay anything. The sewer contractors, the consultants for the sewer, the politicians that get donations, including Mr. Gibson, Mr. Patterson, and Blakesley, Lee and Associates, which is the third largest commercial real estate company in the world, who moved into Los Osos about 5 years ago, and bought a lot of vacant properties. He also leased the old real estate office of Mr. Otto from the 1920s, remodeled it, installed Jerry Gregory, his man, and adopted Jerry Walsh and Richard Margeson's real estate name, Baywood Real Estate, stealing that from them. South Bay Property Owners Association was started by Jerry Gregory in an effort to stop the septic system collection system that we all voted for back in 1999 by 80%. That was the first affordable attempt at a step sewer. Realtors will make commissions as people are priced out. Capital cost per gallon, it's the cheapest that they make. There is no hauling of sludge in this. It produces an effluent that is recyclable. Over here on the right, you see the cost of a step-stake collection system at around $50 million total.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Your time is up. Ben DeFada, followed by Lindy Owen.
Morning, Chairman Patterson, Board, Public Sheriff, and DeFada here from the Upteen Time. From Supervisors Gibson's District 2 bankrupt community of Los Osos. I'm sure you all remember in the old days before crossing any railroad tracks and seeing signs that says, "Stop, look, and listen." We have come before you to ask you to stop Mr. Gibson's $200 million flawed, expensive, unaffordable, antiquated, energy hog, stinking gravity collection project and sludge maker treatment plant. We ask you five to look at the $50 to $100 million cheaper, environmentally friendly, and better alternatives that use a small pipe, shallow trenches, and the latest technology in treatment plants. We ask you to listen to the public suggestions pertaining to the affordability concerns of our citizens, liquefaction damage to a community that sits on top of a sand dune, and the many native and environmental concerns of Los Osos. Whatever your reasoning is, we don't want to hear you say, "Let's get her done, we don't care what it costs." That's not good for many in the prohibition zone. Did you ever wonder why citizens don't trust government anymore? All levels of government are big spenders with someone else's money, and it also applies here too with Gibson's flawed and unaffordable stinking gravity system. Your reasoning to spending this huge amount of money is bordering on malfeasance, the misconduct of public officials, as we can see here being done, or maybe even just plain malice, that is the deliberate harm to spite our citizens that reside in the prohibition zone, or the breaking of federal, state, and federal laws, state laws for his political gain. Your gentrification of underclass citizens of the people in this little bedroom community of the poor, disabled, low, and now middle class income people, it amounts to having to relocate several thousand property owners is criminal. It costs you playing with the people's lives. Our citizens have good reason to be cynical of your board. It's not bad enough that this county's economy is in real bad shape, this country's economy, but you five have used your powers to cause many to be stressed out, with many suffering mental and physical pain because many are having to go into more debt or get out of town. You have caused them a bleak, uncertain outlook of their future for them and their families. With Mr. Gibson's heavily flawed, gravity stinking collection project and sludge maker treatment plant. For your board's track record of having caused many to suffer mental and physical hardships, with the thought of having to relocate, any sharp attorney could take this case and win back the millions of wasted dollars by this and previous board members and their staff's bad decisions. It's all in the record books. For instance, those two eliminated all other alternative competition except gravity, steering it to one of their crony construction companies who thinks that by changing their name, it makes it legal to bid. It can easily be proved with their MO in several states who are charging them with rigging, overcharging, and gifts to politicians to numerous to mention here.
Thank you, Mr. DeFatta. Lindy Owen, followed by Richard Margetson.
Good morning. Lindy Owen from the Prohibition Zone in Los Osos, where 5,000 homes are being asked to pay for a $200 million Cadillac sewer that is totally not answering the needs of the community's water pollution. I wanted to speak. We've recently had about two of the five meetings that were to be held from the County Roads Department to discuss, as anybody that's driven in Los Osos knows, our roads are falling to pieces. They're alligatored. There are potholes that are 3 inches deep. The streets have been put on hold for the last probably 3 years, and $2.5 million has been set aside after the streets are torn up by this collection system that is proposed, that they will come in and use that $2.5 million to then fix the streets that have decayed so badly that they will probably take major reconstruction. What I wanted to point out is that the project is appropriating about $6 million for repairing all those roads after they dig trenches that will go up to 18 feet deep. These are trenches in sand. You can imagine how the sand is going to basically collapse the entire street. So putting aside $6 million to repair and fix those streets back to what shape they're in right now, add the $2.2 million from the county, that's $8.2 million we're looking at. Well, let's just go over and look at Santa Isabel and the wonderful project that they did that took a year or so, and system that always made more sense. It goes from a septic tank, collects pre-treated liquid, so when it spills, it's not raw sewage, and it doesn't go through our water supply, and it's only 4 feet deep in the sides of the road. It's not tearing up roads that we have no money to repair. I beg you to please use common sense and stop this project for a reevaluation.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Richard Margetson, followed by
Lindy.
Gary Arnold.
Lindy, will you mind?
Mr. Margetson?
Push it up just a little bit. That's good. That's good. Richard Margetson, you know that I've been here many times talking about the rates and charges ordinance for Los Osos. My main problem with the ordinance when it was put out is it undervalued the consumption for the commercial district, which caused a rate structure that was inequitable to the rest of the community, basically subsidizing the commercial district. We were told repeatedly that the commercial consumption was 4% in the prohibition zone. Golden State has put out a number of documents over the last couple years stating that it's much higher than that. The Medallist report that was commissioned by the ISJ members came up with numbers that were higher than that amount. But what I have now is two pages from your own document that was submitted to the Coastal Commission last month. The draft recycled water management plan for the Los Osos Wastewater Project. Your own staff put this chart together stating that of on the first page on the overhead of total production in Los Osos, 14.7% is the commercial district, is used by the commercial district. The next page, and that excludes the schools. That's the commercial district. The next page, Lindy, will you put the next page up? States that of consumed water in Los Osos, that's taking out the unallocated or the unaccounted for water, 16.14% is used by the commercial district. And if you go back to page one, circled, 67% of commercial consumption is indoor, which means, gentlemen, almost 11% of commercial consumption for your rates and charges ordinance has to be accounted for indoors. I keep waiting for somebody from the county, somebody from this board, to ask for this to be addressed. You now have provided the last bit of undeniable information stating that that ordinance was set up under false pretenses with false information when you had information available earlier than or sooner than 2004 to have put out an ordinance that was appropriate. 9 weeks from today, I'm giving you 9 weeks from today, Keith Swanson and I will meet with anyone from the county, from this board, that contact us, and you know how to contact us. At the nine-week period, we're moving to the next
level. Thank you, Mr. Margetson.
And that will be contacting first the USDA, the SRF, and then the courts.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Margetson. My final request to speak in public comment, Gary Arnold.
Chairman, supervisors, I delivered you a documentary called A Noble Lie to emphasize my point. A Noble Lie is a DVD available to everybody watching with a simple Google. And it shows the bombing of the Oklahoma Federal Building in 1995. And what it shows is the importance of local sheriffs and local media versus nationalized police, which is happening under the continual nationalization of our local police through Homeland Security and federal grants. That picture we had earlier with you and the sheriffs is important, but there's a lot more going on behind the scenes, and some of which you've been participants of, especially your contract with ICLEI, which is a front for the World Bank. This has an overview also. In the last couple of months, the federal government has contracted with groups such as Blackwater throughout the United States to make available detention camps for 15 million people by April on a 72-hour notice. And within the last 2 weeks, we've had a National Defense Authorization Act, which is the total destruction of the Fourth Amendment. Now, Winston Churchill, in his reference to the Fourth Amendment, he says that's a critical boundary separating civilization from despotism. Yet both political parties did this, and the president signed it, and we don't hear a peep. It was determined that it was a conspiracy by the federal government, yet we hear none of the preachers, we hear none of the politicians that associate themselves with Martin Luther King about a conspiracy by the federal government to kill a leader that was interested in civil rights. We hear no information about the National Defense Authorization Act, which you guys should be putting resolutions up against. Just as Winston Churchill said, this is a foundation of totalitarian government, and we're going into it with dispatch.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold. That concludes our general public comment. So I'll bring it back to the board, and we move into our hearing calendar. And Madam Clerk, would you introduce that item, please?
Certainly. That's item 12, a hearing to consider an ordinance adding Chapter 7.23, truancy prohibited in the Title 7 of the San Luis Obispo County Code. This item was introduced December 13, 2011.
Thank you, and I'll ask staff now to make the presentation.
Mr. Salio.
Chief Salio.
Good morning, Jim Salio, Chief Probation Officer and Chair of the Children's Services Network. Before the board today is a hearing on the truancy ordinance, which was introduced to the board on December 13, 2011. The ordinance is a piece of the Children's Services Network strategic plan for the reduction of truancy and dropout rates that was presented to your board on February 2nd, 2010. Nothing's changed in the ordinance since our introduction. We have posted the ordinance in accordance with the guidelines and are ready to move forward with our hearing today.
Okay. Thank you. Is there a PowerPoint presentation? Or?
No, sir.
Okay. That's it?
I'll wait until after public comment, and then I'll have a couple questions.
Fine. We'll move into public comment on this item. And I do have several requests to speak. You'll all have that opportunity. I would ask anyone that has not filled out a request to speak form, we have them in the back of the chambers as well as up in the front to your right of the dais. If you would please come forward and turn those in, I would appreciate it. You have up to 3 minutes to speak, and I will call two names. Please come forward when I call your name and be prepared to speak. The first speaker is Laura Marshall, followed by Nancy Fortenberry. Please do state your name when you come to the lectern, please.
Laura Marshall. Good morning, Board of Supervisors. My understanding of this truancy ordinance is that it would confine the people that are trying to school their children in maybe unconventional methods, and it would assume that they are guilty before they're instead of innocence. My son has enjoyed many freedoms of being able to get out in the community and do things without feeling that he's going to be that he's not under the law, that he's guilty of something. And now he's gone on to college, and I would hate for others to have to go through these kind of things to feel that they cannot go to a park or go, do unconventional things. We've done PE, physical education, out and about. We've done many field trips and such, and I understand that some of those things would be allotted for, but it overall, I think this creates a sense of evilness, a sense of not being able to have the freedoms that we are given as American citizens. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Marshall. Nancy Fortenberry, followed by Connie Tunks, T-U-N-K-S.
Good morning. My name is Nancy Fortenberry, and I'm here as a concerned parent that this truancy ordinance, if passed, is going to presume our children guilty until proven innocent, which violates our rights, violates our, and that it just goes against all of our rights now, as the 14th, 5th Amendments, 4th Amendments, unreasonable searches and seizures. And I don't see anything positive that could come out of this for the majority that are doing what they're supposed to do, opposed to the few that may be out there. And I believe we already have laws intact for the truancy issue, and it should be more the school parents and children that are truant, not everyone presumed guilty, and then you prove your innocence. So I think it needs to stay within that form instead of this ordinance. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Fortenberry. Connie Tunks, T-U-N-K-S, and Joshua Tharp.
Good morning. My name is Connie Tunks. I was pleased to arrive and pledge allegiance to our flag, One Nation Under God. I was very warmed by seeing people who had saved a life recognized here on the day that I brought my daughter, who is homeschooled. And it was pleasant to see those items in place here because it shows that there are that we have hearts for justice and mercy and love already in place in this forum. So I'm so pleased to be able to see those things when I arrived. Regarding the truancy ordinance, I did go online and see what the state had. There's truancy laws in place by the state, and I know San Luis, Lucia Mar School District also has truancy guidelines that are already in place and are implemented. And it seems that there appears to be several boards that are very active and interested in the well-being of the students of our county. The Department of Social Services, the County Health Department, County Office of Education, Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Commission, San Luis Obispo Child Abuse Prevention Council, Transitions Mental Health Agency, and an additional seven agencies that are concerned about student dropouts and them not being where they should be during school hours. But as was mentioned earlier, it appears that all these agencies that are in place isn't effective enough, but I think it probably is. Oro Grande High School was recognized in the top 100 for how many graduates they do have. And it was like 95% that attend Oro Grande High School graduate. So it appears that our county is already doing a fine job under the laws that are already currently enacted. And I have the same concerns as the woman before me. It just adds more additional laws that don't appear to be that necessary here in our county. So I would ask that you... I applaud the efforts already by all the systems in place and the people and individuals who do care about our high school students down to K through 12, and that we wouldn't add more, but that we would just continue to utilize what's already in place because it appears to be working quite well. And I haven't seen any evidence in our county that dictates increasing more laws and restrictions. I thank you for your time and your service. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tunks. Joshua Tharp, followed by Sharon Jansen.
Good morning. My name is Joshua Tharp, resident of Oro Grande, and I've come this morning to express my opposition to this curfew ordinance. I believe the reasons to oppose it are numerous. In fact, I've spent the last several days trying to compress them all into something I could say in less than 3 minutes. Some of them, fundamental rights, like the freedom of movement protected by the 14th Amendment, the freedom from unreasonable searches and seizures protected by the 4th Amendment, the fundamental right to be presumed innocent, the fundamental right to be treated equally under the law regardless of property, wealth, color, or age. There's the fact that the ordinance violates the doctrine of preemption. California already has truancy laws in the books, which preempt local truancy laws, and basically this boils down to a truancy law. And then there are flaws in the ordinance itself. Studies show that daytime curfew laws do not actually diminish juvenile crime, that while the ordinance claims to reduce the burden on law enforcement, it does the opposite. It requires agents to detain, question, and possibly transport youth throughout the state. It requires agents to know the school schedules for all schools.
Also a resident of Aurora Grande, and we're here to state our opinion on the truancy ordinance. The truancy law assumes that a minor is guilty of truancy because of his age and time of day. The daytime curfew is a violation of our fundamental legal principle of the presumption of innocence. This presumption is protected by the Due Process Clause of the 14th and 5th Amendment to the United States Constitution. Being truant is being out of school, skipping school on purpose. The proposed ordinance is based on an assumption that all kids between the ages of 6 and 18 who are in a public place during an assumed school hour are out to hurt someone or do something wrong, and that they need to be detained. Daytime curfews violate the minor's fundamental constitutional right to freedom of movement as guaranteed by the 14th Amendment on the public streets, highways, and areas of the city without being subject to government restraint. The daytime curfew also results in violations of the minor's Fourth Amendment rights to be secure against unreasonable searches and seizures. A policeman should not stop and question anyone unless there are actual facts that make it reasonable to suspect that a crime has occurred. If a policeman stops and questions a person without such facts, it is a violation of the citizen's rights under the Fourth Amendment. Even with a home education provision in this ordinance, the question will be, how will a law enforcement official differentiate between a truant child and a privately educated child? This will force IDs, registrations, papers, special marks on clothes. Does this sound familiar? What I have a this is my son. He is an eighth grader. He attends private school that happens to come out of my home. And our classroom today is here. You're part of his education, and he has some things to say.
Good morning. My name is Jordan Jansen, and I'm here to talk about the truancy ordinance. I could not even walk my dog during school hours down the road just to get the mail without possibly getting pulled over and being driven back to my house, which is only 300 yards away. Frequently, I go to the grocery store for my mom while she waits in the car. I am in there to buy groceries as part of my education of how to use money and make purchase decisions, not being truant. Homeschoolers use the flexibility of their schedule to be, at times, out and about doing things for mom, like shopping in the store. So if this ordinance became a law, I would be subject to questions just because of my age and time of day. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. Please, 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 hold your applause. Eric Greening, followed by Grant Dorman.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and first, as I brought up on December 13th and January 10th, in the interest of participatory democracy, I would ask you to take no action on this until or unless you can hold a hearing when school is not in session. To regulate a population in the absence of that population is something you take pride in not doing. You wouldn't do it with the business community, the agricultural community. You shouldn't do it with the youth community. I'm thankful that some young people are here thanks to being homeschooled. And I would remind even those who are in school that there is a First Amendment exemption, and if you do hold another hearing on this, they might as well all come down. But that said, I have some very specific problems and some questions. The problem has already been hit upon multiple times, and that is the presumption of innocence. Essentially, you are placing the burden of proof on the young people to prove that they have a legitimate right to be there. And that is completely backwards. The ordinance has the penalties of fine and community service. It doesn't mention as a penalty imprisonment, and yet it also says that until or unless the facts can be established to one of the 12 exceptions, they would be detained. It is totally unclear as to where they would be detained or for how long. The word transport is included. I would like you to clarify in front of the young people in this room where and how they would be detained and for how long. And if they are under some kind of detainment, how are they supposed to prove that they have a right to be in a public place? This is utterly, utterly backwards. It is not your job to criminalize the presence of anyone not doing anything wrong aside from simply being in a public place. And again, I would beg you, you had 14 committees of the Children's Services Network, all made up of adults. You wouldn't do this with the business community, have 14 committees with no business people deciding what business people need to do and then have a hearing in the absence of the business people. You are abandoning participatory democracy if you move forward with this to
48260, subsection A, as any pupil subject to compulsory full-time education or to compulsory continuing education who is absent from school without valid excuse for 3 full days in 1 year, or tardy or absent for more than 30-minute period of during a school day without a valid excuse on 3 separate occasions in 1 year. So until the pupil has actually reached those milestones, he's not legally truant. It's important. Just being on the street does not make you truant. You have to meet those milestones. The legal consequences are already set forth under California Education Code 48264.5. The proposed truancy ordinance seeks to redefine that which the California Education Code has already set forth, not just the definition, but also the consequences. If passed, the proposed truancy ordinance would be preempted the instant the pen touches the paper, since it is in direct conflict with the existing state statute. Despite the fact that the ordinance says it does not intend to interfere or supersede the enforcement of those state laws, it in fact does interfere. So then, who has the final authority over matters of education, local authority or the state? Well, in Patton versus Governing Board of San Jacinto Unified School District, the Court of Appeal said that, I quote, education is a statewide concern and the legislature is vested by the Constitution with the ultimate control over school matters. So because the legislature has the ultimate control over school matters and because truancy is a school matter, the proposed ordinance is preempted the instant it is adopted, effectively making it impotent. So why is it dangerous? This changes the authority structure. It has long been held that parents have direct authority over their children, while those parents are then accountable to society as a whole. This ordinance attempts to make those children accountable directly to the enforcing agency, essentially inserting themselves between the children and the parent. The second reason why it's dangerous is the presumption of guilt, which you've already heard. How could a law enforcement know that a child is truant when the definition of truancy is a pattern of absenteeism? The mere presence of a child in a public space is not sufficient to demonstrate the requisite pattern of truant behavior as defined by the California Education Code. In light of the above matters, it is in the best interest of the Board of Supervisors and the community as a whole to wholly reject the proposed truancy ordinance and to advise the existing educational authorities to exercise their responsibilities under existing law and not contribute to the cumbersome bureaucracy by passing new laws which serve no constructive purpose. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dorman. Marion Curtis, followed by, looks like... Paul Nardum? Nardum, does that sound familiar to anyone? It does. Okay, please do come forward. All right, Ms. Curtis.
Hello, thank you for hearing me speak. I'm Marion Curtis, and I'm a credentialed teacher with the state of California. I am also a retired principal of Heartland Christian Academy, which is a private school under the state of California. We do primarily... home education, independent study, and various classes. And I'm here not to repeat what many people have said and what people are going to say. I would just like to ask if it would be all right if those who are here that are in opposition to this ordinance would please stand. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Paul, and I'll let you clarify the last name, if you will. And then I have the next speaker is Bruce Curtis.
This is Paul. I'm Paul Norholm, and thank you for allowing me to speak to this morning. I am against the daytime curfew, and I'd like to mostly read what I have to say here. The point I have to make is not in favor of truancy, but against the daytime curfew, which in a sense is a beefed-up truancy ordinance to increase revenues through taxation. We already have a comprehensive, fair California truancy, which simply needs to be enforced and which is being enforced. Our county is lower than the statewide truancy. I think the statewide is 13%, and we're around 9 or 11%. So we're already doing a pretty good job with what we have in place. to compare the California's truancy with this daytime curfew. California truancy describes that a pupil, as discussed before, is only truant after 3 days of tardiness or 3 days of missing school. The daytime curfew presumes a juvenile as guilty until proven innocent of the first alleged abuse. California's code involves notifying the parents by phone or by email, putting the first authority in the hands of the parents, compelling the attendance of the pupil to school and giving her or the or the superintendent of the schools, not the police departments. And I also want to note that what we're talking about here is increasing costs, increasing state and police use for something that can and should be done and is being done effectively already with the parents and the superintendents of the schools. Daytime curfews will result in selective enforcement, since officers will not be able to be able to stop every juvenile that's walking on the streets and check their IDs. They'll have to be selective. This opens up extremely dangerous potential for unequal treatment of minors based on race, looks, dress, attire, tattoos, whatever.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Norholm.
Okay.
Appreciate your comment. Bruce Curtis, followed by Joy Unger.
Good morning, and thank you again to your board for allowing us to speak today about something we're obviously concerned about. By now, your board will have received copies of a memo from the Homeschool Legal Defense Association that does a much better job of fleshing out the constitutional concerns that we have than we probably could do here today. But there are a couple of things we'd like to touch briefly on, and I think more or less anecdotal. If you look at your handout at some point when it's convenient, the very last page of that handout will illustrate some of the major problems the city of Los Angeles has had dealing with this, including a lot of opposition from minority and low-income communities. Apparently, not intended to be discriminatory ordinance, has actually worked out that way in practice. There's a few things we're concerned about. Obviously, many of us are homeschoolers, but this ordinance, which, by the way, we were never asked for input, and I know Jim Salio, we worked together, I was a volunteer at JSC for a long period, yet we were shut out of this process. We would have liked to have been a part of this to help warn these guys about this before we took up your board's time. There are a lot of folks that are going to be potentially affected by this, because when you take a law that assumes that somebody is guilty for their presence alone, then you put the civil rights of every child in this county, they hang by the thread of one officer. And we appreciate the hard work our officers do, but do we want to bet our children's legal future and our finances on the hope that every single officer will be infallible all the time? And we're all human beings. We know that that's difficult. Here's some of the folks affected by this. We'll zip through it quick. Your board's time is valuable. Anyone get out of here early today, we'll help you if we can. You've got students en route to doctor appointments, dentist, therapy, treatment, counseling, non-school supported sports, students in faith community activity, students taking on off-campus lunches. I understand our high schools in this county are predominantly open campuses. GATE, special need, family ag work, theater, music, daytime events at the Cohen Center over at the Clark Centers, Slow Youth Symphony, got academy classes, debate tournaments, Montessori, parochial, ISP, enrichment. You know how many homeschool students that are under 18 that attend Cuesta College? My son's a computer geek. He's one of them. We have a patchwork of laws in this county, scheduled in this county, that no officer can be assumed to know all of them, and they're not going to. We don't pay our police to try to make people innocent. We pay them to enforce the law, to assume guilt. Unfortunately, that's something we'll have to be concerned about. Students are off campus doing volunteer work, which is required of their requirement to graduate. Do we want to criminalize that? Sometimes that happens during school hours. Many more things. I'd love to take the rest of the day, because there's way too many things to bring up than we have time for. But once again, my appreciation to the homeschool community and the non-traditional educational types who are here that are standing up for this. We want to urge you not to take the county down this road. It'll end up costing you legally. As a taxpayer, I don't want to pay for that either. Again, thank your board and good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Curtis. Joy Unger, followed by Randall Shanks. Ms. Unger?
Hi. I realize that my paper is just going to be repetitive if I read it. So With that said, I have on here the amendments, and just want to ask you guys to please consider the daytime curfew. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Unger. Randall Shanks, followed by Dominic Santangelo.
Good morning. My name is Randall Shanks. Thank you for listening to us. We're strongly opposed to the daytime curfew because, first of all, it violates the rights of the parents to direct the education and direction of their children. The city and county governments become the final arbiters of daily decisions of families. If a parent deems that a child needs to be out of school for a day because of illness, emotional issues, family matters, or some other such thing, the child is now open to breaking the law, possibly being cited or stopped for this. This is unacceptable. As long as the school knows that a child is absent, that is enough. Daytime curfews violate the rights then of the parents in the directing of the education of their children. Secondly, it violates the right of the student. Our judicial system is built upon the presumption of innocence until proven guilty. This law makes every student guilty of a crime unless proven innocent. A very small percentage of juveniles, the local governments to keep track of these schedules, many of which change on a weekly basis. It would further place the county as the final arbiter of how private ISPs, private schools, charter schools arrange their schedules and work with their students. This is an unacceptable invasion of the rights of these schools under the current laws of the state of California. Please vote against any implementation of this daytime curfew. California already has extensive truancy laws on the books, which provide ample ability to deal with the few juveniles who are breaking the law. Strictly enforce those laws. Do not make every child a criminal for being in the public square during these hours. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Shanks. Dominic Santangelo, followed by Mikhail Ganaj.
Good morning.
Santangelo.
My name is Dominic Santangelo, resident of California. I oppose the truancy ordinance as written. We have two grown children that were, my wife and I have two grown children that were privately homeschooled K through 12. My wife, Patricia, and I are administrators of Cornerstone Christian School, a private school satellite program, more commonly referred to as a homeschool group. We have been administrators of the school for 11 years. At any given year, our enrollment families and their grades 1 through 12 children come from mainly North County cities and unincorporated areas, including San Miguel, Creston, Shandon, Templeton, Carrizo Plains, and Santa Margarita. We also have had families enrolled from Los Osos and Morro Bay. I represent these children and families today. I have read and understood the proposed ordinance adding Chapter 7.23 Truancy Prohibited to the San Luis Obispo County Code. The ordinance has 12 exemptions for which it will not apply to a minor, including number one, which states the minor must be in the direct supervision of his or her parents, guardian, or other adults having the care and custody of the minor, and number three, which includes a minor receiving instruction from home. These exemptions as written are vague and unclear as to how they would be practically applied by law enforcement officers to private homeschoolers and our constitutional rights to teach our children. The right for a parent to privately homeschool their child has been upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court, California Supreme Court, the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, and the California Attorney General, and countless other institutions. Do you know that the California Department of Education website, which private schools like ours fill out their annual private school affidavit, lists over 300 K through 12 private schools, private homeschoolers in San Luis Obispo County? No school district has the authority over these children. Their parents do. Do you know that not listed on the California Department of Education website are hundreds more families in San Luis Obispo County who fill their own private affidavit to homeschool their children and are not part of the 300 number I just mentioned? No school district has authority over these children. Their parents do. Do you know that before I just told you that there are hundreds and hundreds of parents in San Luis Obispo County that homeschool their children privately, without government intervention or public school funds? Do you know that if these private homeschool citizens were represented or invited to the table when this ordinance was crafted, they weren't? Is that justice for all? Public school homeschoolers were, I assume, represented by the people that were on the task force, but the hundreds of private homeschoolers are not under the authority of school districts and county offices. Homeschooling, and specifically private homeschooling, is often misunderstood on the amount of time.
Very good. Thank you
very much.
Thank you, Mr. Santangelo. Mikhail Ganache, followed by Eve Mallow.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mikhail Ganache. I'm a father, lifelong resident of the Central Coast, local business owner, and the administrator for ACTS, Homeschool Association and Private School. I am strongly opposed to the curfew. I am in support of the enforcement of current truancy laws. I have two primary issues with the ordinance. The first is constitutional, and the second is practical. I don't want to be redundant, but for that sake, the emphasis of the point, I will to a degree. First, in contrast to the current law, this new ordinance, in an effort to reduce crime and truancy, criminalizes a group of citizens. This would be a clear violation of the civil rights afforded all citizens, including minors. Is it right to presume guilt upon someone just because they are a minor and in public? I will not bore you with a list of legally acceptable reasons for this circumstance to exist. It is enough to know that both the Fourth and the 14th Amendment give all citizens the right to be presumed innocent until proven guilty. The fundamental difference proclaimed in this ordinance and in its enforcement is that you are guilty if you are a minor and in public during the day. This ordinance is not a new idea. Out, say shopping or dining, at times like these, we do not need to deter our bread and butter for coming to the table. If we were a police state, a curfew would make sense. Is this really the direction we want to take our country? Do we want to raise our children to distrust the law enforcement? This ordinance will demonstrate our distrust of them. Do we want to, as other countries have, send the message to our children that guilt is assumed and innocence is proven? I hope you'll stop and consider the broad-reaching impact this will have on our community. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Ganache. I know some folks have come into the hearing since we began public comment. If you would like to speak on this item, please complete a request to speak form and bring that up to your right of the dais here. Eve Mallow, followed by Kathy Inger.
Thank you for your time. My name is Dr. Eve Mallow, and I'm a certified teacher in California and a professor emeritus of education. One of the things, and truancy is a serious problem for the children, but one of the things that I haven't heard so far today is the fact that we aren't hearing from the children why they're truant. And there is a process that has been used in other places that's called community circles. And community circles involve members of the community, including the school, but including the child. And it's an affirming environment where the child can speak as to why they're truant, why they're missing school. And that deals with the issue. Just being punitive and retributive does not help the student. But we do need to hear the voices of the children. And I would be glad to talk more about this with any of you and explain what the community process is and what circles entail at some other time. I mean, that's a whole class I used to teach, so we're not going to go into that. But thank you for your time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Mallow. Kathy Inger, followed by Bob Poulin.
Good morning. I'm Kathy Inger, a North County resident. Also, I do agree with all the people who are opposed to this truancy ordinance. Don't want to take your time. I appreciate the time that you have here this morning. But as they have said, my summary is there are laws already in place. It is a violation of our youth's rights. You're taking away the role from the parents that they really should be filling. And our law enforcement, really, why should they be doing this? There's so many more important areas that they could be putting their services to during the daytime. I don't think that this is where our taxpayer money should be going towards with this. So I encourage you to take a look at the facts. This is not the first time this has been brought up. It's been dealt with elsewhere in California. Look at the facts. They're there. It's not a good solution to keep kids in school. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Inger. Bob Kulin, followed by Christine Allen.
Thank you. I'm Bob Kulin from Tascadero. And I want to briefly address blanket laws and case at hand being truancy ordinance. I don't pretend to know the motives of the those who, you know, were behind this particular law, but and so my what I'm saying is not addressed at them, but rather generally speaking. So I'll read here what I've written. My dear supervisors, being in an honored position such as yours means being responsible to make wise decisions, and that in turn means someone applauds you while someone curses you. It's hard for me to believe that people who enjoy the blood-won liberties of our nation, which are largely peculiar to our nation, would endorse profiles of a police state and expect you to approve them. Who would, if they love freedom, prohibit the use of automobiles in order to secure the speed limit? Who would prohibit the flight of airplanes lest some undesirables should fly on them? The genius of Americanism has never been to punish the whole in order to prevent the few. Creativity is born out of necessity. Misguided blanket laws only stifle. There are better ways to solve our problems, by encouraging the good rather than punishing the innocent. So, who would desire these laws? The fearful, those who sterilize the flowers to prevent the weeds. The misguided, who would cut off their noses to spite their faces, and those with ulterior motives who know better than to let their true reasons be known. Our children and grandchildren watch and will bear the brunt of the decisions we make. Although this looks like a small thing in itself, the direction it heads us should be repulsive to every one of us. So please vote no on the daytime curfew. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kulin. Christine Allen, followed by Mike Brown.
As shopping for my mom, doing nonprofit organization work that I've done, carrying out some of things I do for my own business, going to church, taking care of my grandfather, taking him to a doctor's appointment. I did that at 10 o'clock in the morning not too long ago. And being able to do these things that are very important to my freedom and to the education of my family, and I believe that's a violation of our freedom to be educated and to be citizens of our country. So I ask you to please oppose this this ordinance, because it does set a precedence and gives youth a reason to fear law enforcement, and indoctrinates them to accept the idea that they do not have liberty that respects their own rights to freely move, move about, and be assumed innocent rather than guilty. And I thank you so much for letting us speak here before you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Allen. Mike Brown, followed by Christina Arakaki.
Mike Brown, representing the Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and Business. As we have said to you before in various forums, people are getting tired of all the regulations and laws and things that are constantly being generated here and in some of the other bodies that you serve on. And we think that you ought to take a cold water pledge to stop any new regulations and fees and things for a while. In this case, the write-up says that it wouldn't have any cost. And I did ask some of the staff involved in this, and they said, no, it wouldn't have any cost to implement this program. Well, if they are going to detain people and transport people and so forth, I would imagine that somehow then the public defender might get involved. Certainly from the speakers here, if you adopt this, it could become a full-time employment program for county council defending you against it. We think you ought to go back and get the problem defined. The problem was shortly defined in the write-up. It says 33.97% of all students had truancy. Well, what does that mean? How extensive is that? How does it fit with the definitions? What is that like out there? Where does it occur? You know, the normal definitions of the problem. How big is it? And then once you get that data, given the number of truants and the workloads, how will it impact things? What's the operations plan? What will this look like every day? How will it work? What is the structure that will implement the plan? How much will that really cost when you get into it? What are the goals and measures of success? If truancy is at X, by when would it reduce it? And so forth, and what is the reporting schedule? And if you went through that analysis, at least you'd be able to answer a lot of the questions that the people are asking here. And it doesn't go to the broader societal constitutional issues. But again, we think that a lot more regulation in this county is very untimely, and folks need to come up for air and stop.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. My last request to speak is Christina Arakaki.
Yes, thank you. Since the infancy of this country, members of my family have fought for our freedom. Blood, family sacrifice. I'm talking the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, the First World War, the Second World War, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, and all the Iraqi wars in Afghanistan. My father-in-law was double discriminated against as a Japanese American, and yet he fought for our freedom. My grandfather was bombed in Pearl Harbor, and yet he fought for our freedom. Eric Okerblom, a resident of the Orchid area of Santa Maria, shed his blood when a young teenager hit him in her car because she was texting on the phone. I implore you to ponder how can we better utilize our ever-decreasing resources. But the only family in this room that has fought for our freedom. And I feel for the educators, the social workers, and all the people that came up with this bill. The Hispanics, the demographic that I live in is 80% Hispanic. I understand there's needs for our community, and we all have to figure out ways to do this. Giving tickets to the kids texting on their phones and killing our youth, killing and injuring our mothers and fathers and our contributors to society. My husband employs 40 people in Santa Maria in his dental practice. I would like the freedom to be able to choose to homeschool. I would love to say I would love to put my son in the public school. But at this point, I wouldn't. But do I want to be policed? No. So I beg you, please, to consider your power, and thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Arakaki. Another final request to speak, and this is my last request. Christina Aguirre.
Hello, supervisors. My name is Christina Aguirre, and I'm from San Luis Obispo County. I've been homeschooling for a number of years. And I would like to point out that this ordinance is restrictive to homeschoolers. While you're trying to help the truancy issue of delinquent kids out on the street, it does infringe on the rights of homeschoolers. You already have truancy laws. You already have truancy laws that just need to be enforced as they are. This new truancy ordinance would ticket and police all kids. That means if I send my kids out for PE to ride around their bike around the neighborhood, they could be stopped, go through the trauma of being put in a police car, and I would be called
and have to defend them, that would be a very uncomfortable, very bad situation for them. Like others have pointed out, their freedom would be taken away, and they're suspicious until proven innocent. This also is like very restrictive with the time that they're supposed to be inside. That's like saying to any employee that has a 9-to-5 job, you may not go out to lunch and you may not take a walk around the park because you may be violating, you may be in violation, and we may suspect you for the burglary down the street. It's just not common sense law, especially as it infringes on the homeschoolers. I ask you to vote no on this issue and to please have in place the truancy laws that are already out there where police can stop youth, question them, but they don't have, and they could deliver them to the school and not have to cart them off to a police station. Please vote no. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Aguirre. With that, I'll close this hearing to public comment and bring it back to the board. Supervisor Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if Chief Salio would mind coming up and answering a couple questions. Chief, how much, and we've been involved in this, and a lot of folks, I think, are unaware that we've already had a hearing that that the chief and some of the other folks, including the sheriff and Dr. Crocker and others who were involved in this process, went over in greater detail that may have addressed some of the questions. But to the outreach question, and it may be just because of the difficulty, but did we do outreach to homeschool families? We're seeing a lot of, obviously, the main opponents here seem to be folks who are homeschool families, and I wanted to wonder if you could comment on that.
It's Jim Salio, Chief Probation Officer. I'm not sure what outreach was done to the homeschool families. Perhaps Dr. Crocker may have more information on that. Maybe Dr. Crocker could address that.
Okay. If the chair would be amenable to Dr. Crocker.
Hi, I'm Julian Crocker, the county superintendent. As was, I think, represented before, in terms of the private homeschool community, they were not involved in this situation that I'm aware of. We do have a number of homeschool community members who are supported with our public schools, and our public schools are represented in that way. So they're kind of two different groups of homeschooling community, those that work through the public schools and those that work in other venues.
Okay. Did you want to...
this morning. So however you want to proceed with that, Chief Salio, did you want to take some time specifically to address the number of concerns raised by the public commenters this morning?
Yes. If I could maybe just walk through the why we came up with the ordinance, what the rationale behind it was, how it kind of fits into the whole scheme and what we were trying to do to in this ordinance. As I had mentioned, this comes out of a strategic plan to reduce truancy and dropout rates. So very similar to what we did with the Anti-Gang Coordinating Commission, it basically our plan has, you know, three legs of the stool. One is prevention, one is intervention, and one is enforcement. This falls under the enforcement piece of our plan. It just offers another tool to law enforcement, agency, school resource officers primarily, to have sanctions for those youth that are just not going with the other interventions, the other things that we have in place. So while we do have truancy laws on the books that are covered in the educational code, this essentially offers an immediate sanction for truancy, not habitual truancy, which is the three times, but for somebody who should be in school and not in school. So this offers an immediate sanction, which we currently don't have in the county. So again, these are for, you know, the target would be for those students that we have tried other interventions that they have not worked, and we just need to take it up a bit. And the in the plan we talked about in our strategic plan, we talked about a curfew ordinance, and we specifically backed off on the curfew ordinance because we felt that to be too restrictive. This is not a curfew ordinance. This is an ordinance targeted at truancy. So if you're supposed to be in school, this is, and you're not, this ordinance, you're subject to this ordinance. If you are a homeschool student or in some other program or on a work program from school or on an appointment that's been cleared by your parents, you're not subject to this ordinance. And so, again, this was centered at a very select group of students who have not gone along with other types of interventions that we have, the school districts have tried and law enforcement has tried to keep them in school, and then allows for a more immediate, swift sanction in results of a fine or community work service. So the ordinance, as we drew it, we tried to make it as least restrictive as possible and tried to think of every possible scenario where some child wouldn't have to be in school because of some excuse, and that was all the exemptions that we tried to put into the ordinance. And so the idea was that we really wanted to have some sort of sanction that could be given immediately that would be above and beyond the student attendance review board process you have in school districts and other things that the Ed Code allows for. Really, the only type of sanction that's available for truancy in our laws in California, similar to this, comes under the Welfare and Institution Code under 602B of the Welfare and Institution Code. And that's a very cumbersome process. It requires filing a petition with the court, making the child a ward of the court. We don't need to go that far. And so this sanction here within the truancy sanction allows us to have that one intermediate sanction that we need. This is not going to solve the truancy problem. It just gives another tool in our whole array of different things we're doing to solve this issue.
I really wanted to stress the context of this. As Jim has said, this is within a strategic plan, has 12 points. Most of the points relate specifically to parents and schools. And I guess the message that we want to give is that it's really a partnership on the issue of truancy and dropout. It's schools, it's the community, and it's parents. We see this from the school community, which we hardly support, as a way that the community can step forward and give the message that school attendance is important. And beyond just being important, that there are some sanctions for a very small group of students who choose not to comply with those laws. So that's why the 10 school districts are in great support of this.
Question for either, if I could,
yes,
follow up.
Thank you, Dr. Crocker.
For either Dr. Crocker or Chief Salio, how immediate is the problem in terms of our you know, we I know that this is part of a larger plan, and you have been good, as with other members of the network, in briefing us and in bringing this forward. How immediate is the need for this ordinance in terms of addressing the existing problem?
Well, from my perspective, it is an immediate need, because every day that a student is truant from school potentially is on a dropout route. So it is important.
And speaking with the school resource officers, sheriff's deputies who currently work in the schools, this is something they've been asking for 2 years.
Comments right here.
Well, I mean, certainly I would be happy to meet with any homeschool parent to talk about the ordinance. I think it would be important to hear from Sheriff Parkinson on how he would have planned to enforce the ordinance, because I heard a lot of the comments about enforcement and violation of civil rights and kind of throwing a wide dragnet out there, and I don't think that's the case at all.
Right.
I would say from school district, we certainly would be glad to do that in any way that we can. As I've said, there are two general groups of homeschooling community. One, those that work through the school districts, we clearly have access to those parents. Others that aren't part of the school district process now, be very glad to reach out, educate, be sure that people understand what this is or what it's not, if it is indeed passed.
So there might be a way, Dr. Crocker, to have some kind of forum that would invite the homeschool families
certainly
to better from,
yes,
from the school district's,
yes,
perspective.
And Dr. Crocker, if I may follow up, I know homeschoolers that work with the various districts countywide, they also have very flexible schedules, and I'm curious to know what kind of feedback you got from those families through this process.
Well, again, being part of the public school system, I think we feel like we understand that situation and that they understand exactly what this is and what it isn't. And since those students are technically enrolled in a school district anyway, they obviously would be exempt from any kind of enforcement in this case. Do have DJ Pittenger here from the Atascadero Unified School District, if she might address that very directly, because she's very much involved as an example of a local school district that deals particularly with that issue.
Okay, if we may hear from her, and I do want to hear from Sheriff Parkinson as well, and we will follow up with that, but Ms. Pittenger.
Good morning. My name is DJ Pittenger. I'm the Alternative Ed Administrator for Atascadero Unified School District. Part of my responsibilities is dealing with truants within our district, with our at-risk youth. I'm the principal of Del Rio Continuation High School, and I'm also the principal of West Mall Alternative, which is the school where our homeschoolers and independent study students attend. In addition to that, I'd like to say that two of my own four children have been put on independent study at one portion of time in their high school career. I serve as a representative of the district on the AOC committee, which is the Alternative Education Operations Committee. It's myself and my counterparts in other districts who deal with truancy and at-risk students. That committee has been a part of this process and is in support of the ordinance. I am excited to see the number of parents that are here in the audience today, and I want to assure you that this is about safety for your own children as well as protection of your rights to homeschool your children. Many of the people in the audience who spoke talked about how what a good job our county does as far as our dropout rate and keeping those students in school. But there is that 5%, there is that 3%, there is that 10%, and those are the students that this ordinance is targeting. We have a survey that we give in the school districts. It's called the California Healthy Kids Survey. The last time that that survey was given was in 2009. We're in the process of doing that right now. During that last survey, the results, over 50% of our high school students self-reported that they have skipped school, some just once and some more than that. But it's the habitual truants. It's the, as Chief Salio started to define it, it's kind of confusing when you read, you see the word truant in Ed Code. It's referred to three times in a different way. First of all, being truant from school is being there without an excuse, being there without some, or not being there with somebody not knowing where you're at. The second step to that is a student who is considered a truant, and you are considered a truant when you have been truant from school three or more times. Then there is the definition of a habitual truant, which takes that notification out about five more times, and there's a huge process that goes that we go through as school districts of notifying parents each time and then taking them through the pre-SARB and SARB process, which is, again, a whole other lesson that I won't get into today. But I see that this is a tool for our officers to use. We in Atascadero have been partnering with probation for 10 years, and before that we did have a school resource officer from the Atascadero. And what were they doing to cause the officer to call attention to their presence in the first place? That's where I kind of see where the rubber kind of meets the road. And as you know, Sergeant Allen from APD was here, and I was hoping that he was going to be able to kind of be here to talk about how we do that on a daily basis. This is not going to change the way we do business. It's just one more tool for us to use. Someone in the audience talked about the fact that we do have fines that can be given to parents. That's exactly right. As Chief Salio said, we don't have any intermediate intervention for the student themselves. And this is where they can be called to task. They can be requested to pay fines or pay community service. And so as a representative of the district, as the representative of the AOC, we support this ordinance, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Pittenger. Any questions? I see none at the moment. Okay, we'll get to that. Sheriff Parkinson, this is probably the time to address the enforcement issues. And one question I have for you or Chief Salio, this ordinance would only apply to the unincorporated areas of the county, as we know. But it's assumed that the incorporated cities would follow suit, may or may not. And I'm curious to know if, while all of the school districts have supported this ordinance, has there been an effort to communicate with the respective seven incorporated cities and what their position is? So if you could answer that as well as the enforcement question.
I'm going to have to write some notes to answer all these questions. Well, let me begin by saying to the people that came out here today, I think it's a great thing that they showed up. This is their right to speak on something that they don't believe in. And I think one of the early speakers, and I forgive me, but it was either Laura, Nancy, or Connie who brought her son as part of an educational process, and I think that's a great thing. I think seeing all the kids out here listening to this process go through is not only their right, but in some cases their obligation to stand up and speak. And so I think it's a good thing that they're here. When I first really state what the problem is, and maybe this is going to be all-encompassing and answer all your questions, but you know, this was derived out of Children's Services Network, and I mean, this group was there with the interest of keeping these kids out of trouble and getting them in school, and I think that's really important to mention. One of the problems, and from my perspective, I think it's really important to point out that people might not be aware of in the audience entirely, is that we have a growing gang problem. We have a growing problem in parts of this county that we need to address. And part of that is a product of idle time. A lot of that comes from after school, but in many cases it's during school when they're not there. We have to address the problem. And so I look at this as an opportunity to be able to deal with those problem areas and some of those people that are absent at that time. And this gives us the ability to contact them and really get them back in school. One of the later speakers mentioned, I'll paraphrase, he said, unless an officer suspects a juvenile has committed a crime, then they shouldn't be stopped. And I absolutely agree with that. If you read the ordinance down under 723040, the second paragraph, it states clearly, reasonable suspicion based on articulable facts that a minor is in violation. And I think that's really important because that's really the premise of what we do in law enforcement. When we make contact with somebody, it's based on some type of reasonable suspicion. And the fact that it states in here that it has to be articulable. This is not just, I see a child walking down the street toward Vaughn's. This has to be something more than that. And I think that's important. Now, certainly the concern is, and I completely respect it from the people in the audience, that if they're homeschooling their child, that they have a right to send them to the store, they have a right to take them out in educational opportunities in the community, and they don't necessarily want them contacted when they're alone. And it could result in a negative contact if that's the case. And there's always that possibility. And I hate to say that this is written in such a way that will never happen. I mean, I'm not naive. I understand that could happen. But the truth is it's written in such a way that there has to be a reason. Now, the second part of this, or second issue that I just... For 14-year-olds hanging out at the park in the middle of the day when they know for a fact school's in session, it gives them the ability to contact those kids and get them back in school. And that is an important part of what this ordinance is about. Certainly, there's room for contact when they're not hanging out in the park in the scenario I'm discussing. Many times these school resource officers know the kids they're dealing with in their areas. But as pointed out by, I think, a couple members, that people visiting in the area could be contacted. Absolutely. I can't say that that couldn't happen. Would that be my direction? No. I mean, the direction would be that they have to have a reason to contact, and it can't be based solely on age. It might be based on where they're going, what they're doing, who they're with. A known juvenile that is underage and that is habitually truant.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for the sheriff? Supervisor Meacham?
I guess this raises, you know.
Is it for Sheriff Parkinson?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
More questions than answers for me in a sense. Because it was mentioned earlier, we're not going to, I think you mentioned this isn't going to cure truancy. And Sheriff Parkinson, if you see kids misbehaving and you have an officer out there, they're going to talk to them, I would assume.
Misbehaving, absolutely.
Okay. So we already have that in place. And I guess I'm trying to understand, if we have truancy laws in place as been suggested, and you can answer this better than I can understand it probably, but if we have those currently, what is it that we're missing in terms of this ordinance as opposed to what exists currently?
Well, just to clarify something, misbehaving, just so we're clear on the same definition, misbehaving is they are suspected of committing a crime. Misbehaving is not simply out of school. So
I understand that.
Okay. As far as the law, I think Chief Salio can answer that probably clearer than I could on what else is out there. I think part of it was already answered earlier. So.
And then as a follow-up to this, too, the two points that I think were raised that I need a little more clarity on is the issue that was raised about constitutionality and the practical ability to be able to enforce this. So those two items as well.
So let me get back first to Supervisor Patterson's question about the outreach to other law enforcement agencies in the county and municipalities. The truancy ordinance was vetted with the Criminal Justice Administration Association, which is a county organization comprised of the sheriff, DA, probation, and all the chief of police in the county. There have been other police chiefs in the county that have wanted to take this ordinance forward once the county adopts it. So the strategy was that they would be brought forward to the county. The county, if the county then adopts the ordinance, then municipalities then can bring it forward to their city councils to adopt a similar ordinance. So as to the what's different in this that doesn't exist in truancy law, the truancy law doesn't allow for immediate sanctions to get, such as the fine. The parents on an habitual truant can be fined under the penal code. However, there's no direct fine for the student. And this also, we saw this as a way to support parents, because there's a lot of parents out there that want their kids to go to school, but they drop their kids off at school and the kid takes off and doesn't go to school. So this puts the onus back on the student to suffer the consequences for their behavior and not the parent. So we do not have that administrative type sanction that we could do essentially writing a ticket that they would go to then the juvenile informal traffic court and then be given a sanction. There are sanctions for habitual truants, such as losing your license and those kind of things, but there are not an administrative sanction that would go before a judge to hear this. So this is how this would be handled. So it's a little different process. So the truancy process is more cumbersome as far as going to the SAR board, and I mentioned earlier about the filing a petition in the juvenile court under 602B. So this is a more quick, immediate sanction that is very efficient to administer. And I'm sorry, what was the third question?
The issues of constitutionality.
Well, the draft was obviously drafted by county council. I would refer any question about constitutionality to county council on that.
Good
Ms.
morning.
Neal.
Rita Neal, Assistant County Counsel. Yes, our office did advise on the drafting code and why students aren't in school, whether it's a doctor's appointment, a family emergency, a funeral, what have you, but it also exempts the homeschoolers. So lastly, there are these types of ordinances in other counties and cities. There's one, in fact, in Santa Barbara County, San Diego County, and they have been challenged and have been upheld. So looking at this, it's about it being narrowly tailored and narrowly focused and being able to articulate why a young person gets stopped to begin with.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to try to throw something out and see if we can move along with a little bit of haste. I actually support the ordinance, and I think that it's been thoughtfully drafted and that this is part of a very good work plan by the Children's Services Network. However, I think that we have we do have enough of, particularly of folks that are here right now, enough people in the homeschool community, families in the homeschool community who are still feeling as if they're left out of the discussion or the outreach despite what they were able to express to us today. I'm not sure that we couldn't perhaps continue this, allow for there to be an educational forum so that all of their issues could be addressed. If they still disagree with the ordinance, then that's certainly their right. But I would prefer that they do so after having all of their questions addressed, whether they be more succinctly the constitutional issues or the needs or the costs. And, you know, I do think that it's important for them and for the students that are here with us today, too, to feel as if we're being as responsive as possible. So that's something that I could see myself, if that's where the board wanted to do, maybe in a, you know, figure out a time to continue this, come back after there's been some a little bit more outreach, and then have a vote on the ordinance itself. We do, all of us, whether it's the sheriff, the superintendent of schools, our chief probation officers, and all of us here, we do have a duty as educators of public opinion. And I would like for us just to perhaps take a few more steps in that direction. If it was extraordinarily important to adopt it at this moment, then, you know, as I said, I support it. But I think if we could just take a little bit of time, do something that would allow for the folks here and the folks that couldn't make it to get all their answers, questions, and then, you know, at least we feel satisfied that they have been addressed.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm thinking along the same lines, but I want to go a little broader, and I did have a couple of questions prior.
Proceed.
Mr. Salio, I think, touched on one of them, which is the question of due process. A lot of concerns raised that there was a presumption of guilt in any interaction between an officer and a child contacted in public space. But again, if you could emphasize that there has to be due process here in terms of determining whether a child, and I'll use the word child, I'm talking about minor children under 18, has violated. Could you just briefly again touch on what that due process is?
Well, I think the idea that Sheriff Parkinson mentioned and Ms. Neal mentioned too was that there really has to be a probable reason for them stopping the youth, not just that they're youth and it's this time of day.
Probable cause is always a right. case if a charge is going to be brought.
Right.
But you mentioned juvenile traffic court or some
right.
some court system that's going to decide whether this was appropriate or not.
Correct. Yes, there will be due process in this county. The citation would go to the juvenile informal traffic court. Which is a court that doesn't require an attorney or anything like that, and then the administrative officer at that court would then make a decision whether the person was in violation or not in violation. And then the court, by statute, has a wide discretion of different options they can give as a consequence, continue it. They could ask to show, you know, perfect attendance for a month or 2 months. So there's quite a bit of discretion. So there would obviously be a process in place that they could, you know, say whether they agreed that they were in violation of this ordinance or not.
Okay. And I went back and pulled up the truancy and dropout plan. Mm-hmm. It's been a while since we've seen it.
Yes,
it's
has.
It's coming on 2 years since it was before this board. And you referenced it as a 12-point plan, and I'll touch on that in just a second. But one of the, in particular looking at your objective, which happens to be number 9, I'm looking at page 23 of this report, talking about this daytime curfew. In terms of the action steps that are listed there, two jumped out at me. It says, have proposed ordinance reviewed and presented to all local school boards and superintendents, and collect letters of support from all school districts, law enforcement agencies, et cetera. And we heard from AOC here, which I am given to understand is a wide representation. But along the line,
we can certainly provide written documentation.
I think that's important. Mm-hmm. And while you're at the lectern, just in terms of comments on this and where we go, I support the idea of this ordinance. I'd like to have a little more discussion along the lines, especially outreach to the homeschool community, for a variety of issues that they legitimately raise. But the way I see this ordinance fitting in, if you look at your go back to the truancy plan.
Right.
There are a number of points there. The vast majority of them involve the interactions, supportive interactions,
right,
efforts to reconnect kids who are at risk of dropping out with their school, and goes on about special help, mentoring, all the sorts of things that are not enforcement.
And correct.
That plan is very heavily weighted toward non-enforcement things. So my reading of this ordinance is one tool, if properly drawn, that would help reconnect kids to the programs that we know actually prevent truancy. Because I don't think enforcement on the street is a truancy prevention, and I'd be interested in Dr. Crocker.
Absolutely. The single most important reason that youngsters drop out of school is they're not successful in school. It's not rocket science to know that. So by far, the huge burden to keep kids in school is on schools.
Yep.
And as you said, the plan certainly recognizes that, because the vast majority of the efforts have to do with what we do in school. On the other hand, there are two other partners, parents and the community. And as you, I think, very accurately said, this is one tool, happens to be on the community side, I think, to assist us in schools. But by far, the great weight is on schools to do as good a job as we can to have students be successful in school so that they want to come to school.
Okay. And so among those strategies, a lot of creative thinking, I would hope, in trying to re-engage children who have a variety of issues going on in their lives to that. Mr. Chairman, I think that I greatly appreciate the turnout here and the folks participating in this discussion. Again, I support the idea of this ordinance. I think it is, I do believe it is intended to be narrowly drawn. I think we need a little more discussion. I think the exceptions to who this ordinance applies to are carefully thought out. I think they're clearly drawn, but how they're applied is a little more complicated procedure, and Sarah Parkinson just started to talk about that, and I think that's the discussion that needs to go forward. I don't see this ordinance as a violation of rights. Truancy is prohibited by law, and if properly executed, this ordinance is going after those who need to be held to account for that. I don't believe that a presumption of innocence has been abandoned here, but again, I think we need to understand the guidelines, the probable cause, the role of the school resource officer in targeting this ordinance toward those individuals who are specifically this ordinance needs to speak to. And finally, I think the outreach component is extremely important here, both to the homeschool community and to the cities, because in my mind, we need to bring forward an ordinance that is fair, that is defensible, that we can take to the municipalities, because while we do have a number of schools that are in the unincorporated area of the county, I think the bigger place where this ordinance needs to come to bear is within incorporated cities. And I'd like to get, as we come back to this, a sense of where the cities are in terms of that. So looking at the calendar, I checked with the clerk. Middle of March, we would have a couple hours available.
I have a question. Yes, I do have more discussion here. Supervisor Teixeira.
Thank you, Chairman Patterson. I appreciate everybody coming out today. It means a lot to see this much parent involvement and that you care about your kids and what they're doing and what they're not doing. But I think that we're looking at the wrong people. These aren't the people that we're going to have problems with. We have problems with the kids that their parents don't care. They don't show up for the meetings. They don't show up for the hearings. They don't show up for their school activities. You people care. You care enough about your kids to not only make sure that they get an education, but they get a proper education, and you're involved in it, and I commend you for that. I also agree with my colleagues on this ordinance, and I think it's something that we very definitely need. When I served on the school board at Lucia Moore, one of the things that I was very adamantly against at the beginning was having a school resource officer. Why do we need police on campus? Sheriff Parkinson spoke to that. With the gang activity and the things going on in the schools, in society today, schools are not necessarily a really safe place. I mean, we hope that they are, and we hope that bad things don't happen. But with resource officers and law enforcement in the area, I think that we just do a better job. I would hope that if one of our law enforcement officers...
There is the constant reference to gang activity, for example. And I don't in any way want to take away the resource capacity and the resource availability to our gang task force and the sheriff's department to work on that, because I think gangs and drugs are the plague of this country. And if we can address that, I don't want to ever take away the financial resource to be able to deal with that. From the outreach standpoint, I completely agree with my colleagues in regard to there needs to be a little bit further outreach done. And I would be curious to know, Dr. Crocker, if the school boards have taken this issue up so that they had the ability to have the public weigh in on that from the at the school board meetings as well. We have a number of school boards throughout the county, and their input would be vital. I was really surprised at the lack of awareness of this truancy ordinance from the public out there. I had a little radio interview, and I told folks that we were going to be doing this, and next thing I know, I got a lot of phone calls, a lot of emails. Well, you know, when did this come up? How are we doing this? What does this mean? So all that really tells me is that we need to do a little bit more in terms of outreach to incorporate all of the different interest groups here, and in particular the homeschool folks. My granddaughters were homeschooled. I think that it's important that we get the word out to everybody so that this is something that can be better understood and better focused in terms of what we're trying to accomplish here. There's been a lot of work on this, and you've done some great work on this, Chief Salio, the sheriff, Dr. Crocker, and others. But I think that we're not quite there. In regard to the time that we want to continue this item, is this after the spring break or is this before?
Well, I think given the interest in having more entities weigh in on this, I don't think we can actually get that done by mid-March. I think we're going
to
need
to take it off calendar.
I think we're going to need a little bit more time to get that done. But if I may comment as well, and I'll be brief because most of what I have to say has already been stated. First and foremost, I want to thank all of you for being here this morning. I mean, this is the kind of exchange we need to have to ensure that measures we take are fully vetted and the concerns are adequately addressed. And what I've heard many of you speak about, those issues have been addressed to some degree by Dr. Crocker, Ms. Pittenger, our sheriff or our chief probation officer. But if they have not, we'll make that effort to give the homeschooling community that is not connected with our local school districts and our county office of education the opportunity to fully vet those issues and get the answers that you've come here this morning to get. We also want to hear more from our districts and our school boards, as well as the cities that would actually implement this where it would be most effective, because, again, the unincorporated area of the county has very few schools in it. And if this is going to be effective, then we need to be sure that local police chiefs and their respective city councils are also supportive. And I do want to mention that I've spoken to teachers who teach in the districts, and they have expressed to me a need for an ordinance like this because they can't be effective if the kids aren't in schools, and it adversely impacts their ability to teach when they don't have students in the classroom. It affects the effectiveness of the school system in general. So given the issues that have been raised this morning, I think it is prudent to have further dialogue on this. One thing that has been mentioned is we have the Children's Services Network that is a compilation of many service providers to families and students and young people, children. And they've worked over the years to put a strategic plan together. This is one of the tools that has been offered up to help address some of the issues we're facing here in San Luis Obispo County. So again, thank you for participating this morning. I hope it has been Just a moment, please. We have heard you, and we will create a situation where you will have an opportunity to engage further. Please don't interrupt and speak out. It's not appropriate. Supervisor Hill.
Mr. Chair, I move that we continue this item off calendar until such time that the Children's Resource Network has had a chance to more broadly outreach with the community so that all questions are at least answered.
Second.
Okay, and with that, I would ask Chief to speak with contact information.
Excellent.
and will you be sure to let the folks that are here today know the any follow-up activity?
Absolutely.
Yes, and Supervisor
Just a suggestion, maybe, Jim.
Thank you.
I hate to put all this on your back to try to go do all of these things to contact everybody that's out there. You're going to need some help with this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that by meeting with Dr. Crocker and the school superintendents and have them taking this to their boards, having them take this public so that folks can weigh in on it, they might be able to have the contacts relative to the homeschoolers as well so that they can get all the public input we can on this. So I don't want to dump all this on you, but so if you can get the others to help you with this, to get the word out, I'd greatly appreciate that.
Well, I'm sure Dr. Crocker will be right there with me.
Thank you.
Okay, and any more discussion?
Well, just
members? Supervisor Gibson, then Supervisor Tischer.
Thank you. Just another, you might, if you have a phone contact number that you'd like to give, if folks want to call in to be get on a notification list, that would be helpful. And the other thought would be that folks are welcome to contact any of the supervisors, and we'll get you in touch. But
sure. People can contact me at 805-781-1039 or at my county email address. That's jsalio, S-A-L-I-O, at co.us.
S-L-O dot
U.S.
Right from the top.
Thanks. It's jsalio at co.slo.
Co.slo.
I got to get a card. I don't email myself.
It's
co.slo. .ca.us.
You got it.
Thank
Nailed
you.
It. Thank you. Supervisor Teixeira, you had a comment.
Good job, Mr. Salio. My only fleeting comment would be that not only you can contact Chief Salio, your school board, or Dr. Crocker's office, but most of us, or all of us up here on the dais, have regular office hours out in the community. And you're free to contact us and meet with us at any time. So that's what we're there for. Thank you.
Okay. Again, thank you all for being here this morning. We do have a motion on the floor to continue this item off calendar, so it will be noticed when it comes back to the board. I expect it will be a month or two before we get through that public process that we've outlined. And again, I can't thank you enough for being here this morning and expressing your concerns and sharing with us your experiences. And hopefully we can address those adequately. So with that, I'll just call for a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. With that, we'll take a 15-minute break. We'll reconvene at 11:45. An item, please. So, if you would take your seats.
Oh, sorry.
Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Certainly. That's a hearing to consider a request by Sunny Acres Incorporated and Dan Duvall to waive building permit fees for permits to address unpermitted construction in three structures.
Thank you. Staff presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Cami Griffin, County Planning and Building. This is a request for a fee waiver associated with three different building permits. John Bassell is the project manager on this case and will be making your presentation today.
Very good. Mr. Bassell?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, John Bassell, County Planning staff. As the clerk said, this is a request by Sunny Acres and Dan Duvall for a waiver of building permit fees for permits to correct unpermitted construction based on providing a public benefit to the county. The three structures involved, one is the field worker bathrooms, they were built without a permit. There was a dairy barn, which is an old structure that was built before permits were required, and the stucco barn, which actually was built as an ag-exempt structure originally. What has happened, the dairy barn, field worker bathrooms have since been demolished. Mr. Duvall has had these permits issued and has paid the fees, and so this would be a request essentially for a refund of those fees. But the field worker bathrooms have been demolished. The dairy barn, we have not inspected that yet. The dairy barn had unpermitted electrical and plumbing in it, and it was also being used as a dining hall for residents of Sunny Acres. The stucco barn, which was built under the ag exemption, was actually constructed with a full second floor and a partial third floor, which violated the ag exempt building rules, and they had to have to correct that. And we have not had a request for inspections on the dairy barn or the stucco barn. Here's a few photographs. This is either the old silver bathrooms, which are now gone. This is inside the dairy barn. In one of our recent benefit approach to a fee waiver or a fee deferral. And that's why we're recommending that your board deny the waiver request to waive building permit fees as requested by Sunny Acres and Dan Duvall. And that would conclude my presentation.
Okay, very good, Mr. Bassell. Thank you. Are there any questions for staff at this juncture? Seeing none, I'll open it to the public, and I do have two requests to speak. Mr. Duvall, followed by Al Vero. Mr. Duvall?
Thank you, Chairman Patterson and Board. It seems to me that we're getting mixed smoke signals, and I tend to believe that when the CEO asks for a staff report, many times the CEO gets what he wants to hear. I'm a little bit disturbed that no mention is made that all of these buildings were clearly built with the intention of helping the homeless for the greater good. There's no denying that these were illegal buildings. Secondly, it's not mentioned that when you waive the fee to go ahead with this 8,000 square foot building, it seemed like a breath of fresh air or a step ahead. However, to go ahead with that building, we have a laundry list. And these three buildings are the laundry list. I've had two inspections on the dairy barn, and the list keeps growing. I've completed what is so-called field worker bathroom. It's not for field workers. You know, the clients at Sunny Acres are the field workers. So it's all part of the same program. But we can put other names on it to make it seem like I was trying to circumvent the law for paid employees, which is not the case. I'm prevented from talking to the board because of litigation. I'm out in the dark. Now I'm informed that there can be no storage of anything that is not ag-related in the dairy barn because it is an ag-exempt building. It is not an ag-exempt building. It was built before there was code. If you can show me in the code where it says any building built before code that it's ag-exempt, I'd like to see it. Came out in the courtroom, that never came out. But now, before they'll pass the dairy barn, I have to take every item out of that building that I cannot prove is ag-related. So I think we're getting mixed smoke signals. You know, do we want to go ahead or are we trying to bury Sunny Acres? That's the bottom line. You know, this is the time of the year when we have our Christmas tree sales. We try and save up enough money to make it through the lean part of the year where we have no produce to sell. And the cold time of the year when we have more clients applying, more needs, and then our big insurance bill comes due in March. But I thought that it was necessary to try and move ahead, take that money from Sunny Acres and pay the $3,700 for the fee waiver. I'd really like to see the board go ahead and refund this fee waiver and let's move on with this project if that's what we're trying to do. And I'd like to have some way that I can communicate as far as coming up here every week and making comments, and thank you for your comments. It's really a difficult way to communicate.
Very good, Mr. Duvall. Thank you. Al Barrow, followed by Ben DeFada.
Thank you. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. I am a homeless advocate. I'm a low-income housing advocate. And just as a background to this, you're attempting with the HSOC to build a 100-unit new homeless shelter for $8 million. Stack that up against $2,000 or $3,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 in waive fees. And the service that's provided for those homeless people is very, very attractive in terms of affordability for this county and for the citizens of this county. Right now, the housing stock in this county is somewhere in the rental market between 0 and 1% vacancy rating. Very difficult to find housing. Even if you could open up your homeless shelter as an over a population that's very difficult, it's out of the sheriff's hair. It's out of. I just think that you need to find a way, figure out a way. I mean, if he can house 60 people and you're going to pay $8 million to temporarily house people, then I think you really ought to really think really long and hard about a way to make it possible to keep this facility open. And I thank you very much for considering that.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Ben DeFada.
Good morning again. A funny thing happened to me on the way to the forum this week. My furnace went out. We're waiting for the part right now. You talk about cold inside of a house. Think about the people who are laying under a bridge or in the bushes somewhere. It is cold. His problem is he's got a nosy neighbor that's bothering him all the time with binoculars, I guess, and who is very influential. But I asked you to work with the gentleman. He's trying his best. He's we're from a different generation where we try to save a buck, and we don't understand the ins and outs of politics. Let these people sleep in his cabins that he has in there until he gets his permits. Give him his waiver. And what else? And mean, he's been there for many years. Many of the ordinances should be grandfathered. If there's safety involved, let's do it. But the buildings are still standing up. If there's a fire hazard, take care of it. Anyway, consider how cold it is. Give the guy his waiver and get him on his way so we can help people from freezing to death like I have been for the last two nights.
Thank you, Mr. DeFatta. That was my last request to speak, so I'll close public comment and bring it back to the board. Supervisor Hill?
Related to both Mr. DeFatta and Mr. Barrow's comments, Mr. Chair, I do know that that the warming shelters that we have helped and worked with the community to keep open are, in fact, operating last night, tonight, and tomorrow night in freezing weather. I know that Prado is open to take people in, and I believe you probably have more knowledge of the Atascadero warming shelter, too, but that is being addressed.
Yeah, they use the Atascadero uses the same threshold as San Luis Obispo, which is temperatures below freezing, and it was a whopping 16 degrees in Atascadero this morning on my way in. So I do think that they are open. I do have a follow-up question for Mr. Bissell. It was mentioned that the dairy barn was not an ag-exempt structure, that it was built prior to the code. Can you speak to that?
Well, it was actually built before building permits were required, but it was a barn or ag building, mm-hmm. which normally would require it to be used for agricultural storage equipment, things like that. It was being used, you know, as a dining hall with a lot of things that would not be permitted in it under current code.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If my colleagues don't have any other questions, I've prepared for a motion just a couple of comments previous. You know, we've tried to work with Mr. Duvall over the years, and we have accommodated him on a number of fee waivers coming forward that I think were clearly in the public interest. I'm afraid this one is not one that I can support. It's very clear that the permits being issued are to undo illegal construction, and this board has determined that construction to be illegal. Mr. Duvall today admitted that construction was illegal, and I think it creates an untenable precedent if we then turn around without substantial justification. I don't see any either in the testimony or in the staff report, and waive fees to undo something that shouldn't have been done in the first place. So with that, I will move that we deny this request and approve the resolution that was included in our staff report.
And I'll second that with a quick comment saying that, I think it's the part of the narrative that unfortunately continues is that gets left out is that the county's always, previous boards, the current board and staff have always sought to work with Mr. Duvall to actually make what it is that he does out there work and safe and all of those things. It's never been, at least to my knowledge, a position of the county that we oppose Mr. Duvall's desires to have a program for folks that he wants to house and work with. That's never been the issue. But we have not been able to get really anywhere